All right, Madam Chair, we are ready. We are recording and broadcasting.
Thank you so much. I call this meeting of the State Lands Commission to order. I am Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounalakis. Welcome to our completely virtual State Lands Commission meeting. Ms. Lucchesi, will you please call the roll of the commissioners in attendance?
Certainly. State Controller Betty Yee.
Here.
Gail Miller, representing the Department of Finance.
Here.
Chair and Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounalakis.
Present.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum present. In addition, I would like to identify the members of the staff of the Commission and the Attorney General present for this virtual meeting. I am Executive Officer Jennifer Lucchesi, and I am joined by Chief Counsel Seth Blackman, Meeting Liaison Kim Lunetta, Assistant Executive Officer Colin Connor, Supervising Deputy Attorney General Andrew Vogel, our Zoom co-host Katie Robinson Phillip, Mike Farina, and Phil Schlater. We also have a number of division chiefs and assistant chiefs and staff, as well as panelists on the Zoom meeting to help with the meeting and answer any questions you may have. I'll turn it back to you, Chair Kounalakis.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lucchesi. For the benefit of those joining us virtually, the State Lands Commission manages state property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. The Commission also has the responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine oil terminals and offshore oil platforms, and for preventing the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we will hear requests and presentations involving the lands and resources within the Commission's jurisdiction. We recognize that the lands we manage have been inhabited for thousands of years by California's Native people and take seriously our trust relationship with these sovereign governments. I want to take a moment to honor the California Native American communities all across the state for persisting, carrying on diverse cultural and linguistic traditions, and sustainably managing the land that we now share. Native people have maintained a constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are essential stewardship partners, whether along the coasts, along our rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts. We thank California Native American communities for participating in this commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. The next item of business will be public comment. Before I open public comment periods for items not on the agenda, first let me thank everyone, especially our stakeholders and members of the public, for taking the time to join our virtual meeting. While these virtual meetings are becoming more and more routine, this is still a relatively new experience for most of us, and we appreciate your support and patience as we work together on this virtual platform. Now, I want to turn it over to Ms. Lucchesi to quickly share some instructions on how we can best participate in this meeting so that it runs as smoothly as possible. Ms. Lucchesi.
Thank you, Chair Kounalakis. First, everyone, please make sure you have your microphones or phones muted to avoid any background noise. For members of the public, if you would like to speak either during our open public comment period or during a public comment period that is part of an agenda item, you will need to do so in one of two ways. First, if you are attending on the Zoom platform, please raise your hand in Zoom. If you are new to Zoom and you joined our meeting using the Zoom application, click on the hand icon at the bottom of your screen. When you click on that hand, it will raise your hand. Second, if you're joining our meeting by phone, you must press *9 on your keypad to raise your hand to make a comment. If you are calling in and want to view the meeting, including the PowerPoint presentations, please view the meeting span live webcast link. There will be a slight time delay, but it will avoid an echo or feedback from using the Zoom application and your phone. If you emailed us with a request to speak, please also raise your hand so we don't inadvertently miss you. We will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they are raised using the name they registered with or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so that you can share your comments. Please also remember to unmute your computer or phone and identify yourself. Remember, you have a limit of 3 minutes to speak on an item. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We will mute anyone who fails to follow these guidelines or at worst dismiss them from the meeting. Finally, every now and then, you will hear me refer to the meeting host. Our commission staff are acting as hosts for the meeting behind the scenes to ensure that the technology moves the meeting forward smoothly and consistently. The commission has also established an email address to compile public comments for our meetings. Its address is cslc.commissionmeetings@slc.ca.gov. We have received various emails from parties that have been shared with all the commissioners prior to the meeting. If we receive any emails during, be shared with the commissioners and be made available on our website, along with the public comment emails we have already received. Chair Kunalakis, that concludes my virtual meeting instructions. We're ready to move to the general public comment period.
Thank you so much. Our next order of business is the public comment period. If anyone would like to address the commission on any matter not on today's agenda, please raise your hand and you will have 3 minutes to do so. Katie, please call on the first person who would like to make public comment.
Thank you, Chair Kunalakis. For the first public comment today, we have Tom Rudolph.
Thank you, Katie, and good afternoon, Chair Kunalakis, members of the commission and staff. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. Great. My name is Tom Rudolph. I'm here today representing the Pew Charitable Trusts, and I just want to very briefly say thank you to the commission and congratulations for your outstanding efforts last year that resulted in the passage of your new strategic plan a couple of months ago. We were a new participant to the commission process, and we came to the commission just over a year ago introducing a new issue, which was our concerns with the commission's current policy and regulations governing seabed mining on state submerged lands off the West Coast. We greatly appreciated the commission's extended scoping period throughout 2020, which allowed us to have a good back and forth and bring new information on multiple occasions. We greatly appreciated the commission dedicating time and effort to research this new issue we raised and to consider and propose a path forward in the new strategic plan, which we thought was a great next step. And we are very much looking forward to those next steps. And so just very briefly wanted, again, to say a sincere thank you on behalf of our organization and that we're very much looking forward to further collaboration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Katie, please call on the next speaker.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Brett Belint.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. I do have some slides that were emailed in earlier. If we could are those queued up by chance?
Katie, are we able to see Mr. Ballant's slides? Okay, there they are.
Go ahead, Mr. Ballant. Hello, everyone. Last year, about maybe 2.5 years ago, I presented to the commission some concepts of some things. I just want to ring a little true with some things that are near term for us. We've heard about this term urban air mobility. You may have heard some other terms that are out there, regional air mobility, and even NASA's pushing advanced air mobility. So let's step into it here. We are, please, the next slide, if you could. Let's ask why about all their operational safety challenges, this, what's the necessity of the public engagement, and how do we inspire to move forward here? Next slide, please. A little bit of animation there, a little chug it along. You see that we're engaging many different forms of engagement. The most important thing to discuss here today with the commission is a scalable infrastructure. We're already speaking with many other organizations that are like the Joby Aviation and other California-based companies that are building these craft. You may know they're up in the marina area. But next slide, please. The scalable infrastructure element to discuss really is repurposing other properties that are around in California that can be used to flesh out the system. And we have a website, as you can see, there's some things there. We're still in lowdown mode with a few things, but there's other properties that can really be well repurposed, reused, and for vertiports, skyports of this nature. Next slide, please. And how do we inspire the public to get engaged with this? It's not just here for the people with resources, it's for people with all that need to go someplace, to get somewhere, to get home to family quickly. And we'll keep pushing along here to the next slide. But we want to really make sure that we're engaging all parties through this. And that's not easy. It takes time, takes education, takes what is very common that we're finding is the fear of flight. Are people really going to get in these craft? Are they different from helicopters? So we're engaged in a global education process with that right now. And we'll be discussing that more in Q3. Next slide, please. So as we've discussed previously, we know that Rincon Island is coming down to a close. We're very glad that everything's gone there and accelerated very well. We see this as a way to repurpose and reutilize this, as well as other properties around the state, county fairgrounds that are underutilized, as an example, and other locations. I'm in another location right now and have some other meetings at the federal level to discuss other properties around the country and to utilize this way as well. We're looking forward to engaging further, and thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. Katie, do we have the next speaker, please?
Sorry about that. Our next speaker is Allison Madden.
Allison, you can go ahead. Allison, are you there? Allison, if you're there, can you check and see if your mute button is turned off? We cannot hear you.
There might be an issue with her audio. Allison, if you've called in by a number, could you please hit *9 so that you'll be able to raise your hand and I can allow you to talk?
Allison, could you hit *9 on your phone? We still cannot hear you.
If you are hearing us, this is Bob Loy with AGP Video. My cell number for technical support is 805-801-3576. That's 805-801-3576 for any support issues.
Thank you, Bob. Katie, why don't you tee up the next speaker? And Allison, if you can call Bob to get some assistance so that we can get you back in the queue. Katie?
Thank you, Chair Kanalakis. At this time, we have no other hands raised.
Oh.
May I make a suggestion, Chair Kunalakis? Allison did provide us with a number of emails and documents that we had forwarded on to the commissioners yesterday. And so maybe we could move on to the next order of business. And if we are able to address her technical difficulties, we can come back to public comment at a time that's most convenient for the commission.
Maybe Ms. Lucchese, just very briefly, you can share what the content of her communications included.
They were quite dense, so I'm a little hesitant to go through all of that for fear of not being able to represent exactly what she wanted to convey to the commission. Her general comments are the concerns that she has raised previously about the transition of the community at Docktown off of their overboard vessels to other areas and the impacts that that's had on the residents and families impacted by that.
Okay, thank you so much, Ms. Lucchese. And unless we're able to get her back up, we will move on, and that concludes our public comment period. The next item of business...
Excuse me for interrupting, Bob Lloyd with AGP Video. I have been able to speak with Allison, and so she can... she is calling in by phone,
okay.
So I'm going to allow her to talk, and if you could press star six on your phone to unmute.
I see her, I think.
All right, let's see if she can...
There she is, I think. Yeah. No.
Allison, are you there?
The mute button is still...
Allison, I'm going to unmute the phone number that we have here. Because she said she called in by line here. Is this Allison that I've asked to unmute? And it's star
Bob,
six.
That yes, phone number belongs to a different person. This is Katie.
All right, Katie, sorry. So Allison is trying to make contact. I did speak to her on the phone. I will give her a call back and see if we can fit her in at a more appropriate time.
Actually, Mr. Lloyd, we do have a phone number that just popped up that ends in 066.
Okay, let's allow that to speak. Allison, is that you?
Hi, it is.
Allison?
Wonderful. You. Allison, you have, thank you for persevering. You have 3 minutes to address the commission.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So I wanted to give a report back and to just ask for some continued support and potentially some action. I have spoken before about the pretty narrow issue that we're asking about right now, which is Public Resources Code Section 6009.1C13 and the role that it played in a recent First District Court of Appeal decision. It's unpublished, but still very important and kind of high profile. And I did speak to our Senator Becker, Assemblymember Mullen, Assemblymember Bonta before he was confirmed. And I'm very happy that we have our AG confirmed as of last Friday. I've spoken to the Port of San Francisco and the Port of Oakland. And the Port of Oakland attorney called me right after. And the Port of San Francisco chair asked me to provide materials about this issue after the call, and I did that. So we're really in kind of a bit of an advocacy fix to what the First District Court of Appeal did. And I think he was, decided that wrongly, but was perhaps well-intentioned but misguided. And I think that something that wasn't clear to him is that the advocacy for this issue never came from the State Lands Commission or the Attorney General, and that was Nicholas Sukamaki. It came solely from the private party who had $1.5 million to gain and to win by really advancing any argument that could possibly help him win, which is not irrational when you're in litigation. But what it has resulted in is just a real crisis for Redwood City, for the charter, for the clarity of the charter, for its independent port, and then also statewide for every independent port. And so it's a real disaster, and we're trying to clean it up. And I just wanted to say that, so I've reached out to the Attorney General also as Attorney General and am asking for, some input or interpretation on this. And we would just like you to stay perhaps in contact with them and give us all the support you can, because you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I really do believe that the State Lands Commission and Mr. Vogel, in writing the letter that was used as legal advice, that you didn't want to drive a short-term relocation without an actual location for us to go to, that you didn't want us evicted within 2 years, and you certainly didn't want to deprive us of California relocation assistance law benefits, which is what the City of Redwood City has done with that letter. Instead of seeing that we really had plenty of time to work out solutions or to attrition, certainly to be covered by the Relocation Act, none of that happened. So Thank you. Thank you for taking this update, and I appreciate you listening.
Thank you very much for your comments. Katie, do we have any other speakers who would like to address the commission?
Thank you, Chair Kunalakis. At this time, we have no other hands raised and no other members of the public on the list.
Okay, that concludes our public comment period. The next item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the commission's meeting of February 23rd, 2021. Do you have a motion to approve the minutes and a second?
I'll move approval, Madam Chair.
And I'll second, Madam Chair.
Ms. Lucchesi, do we need to have them show their hands on the screen? That no, that's sufficient?
Okay.
All right. We have a motion by Commissioner Yee and a second by Commissioner Miller. Ms. Lucchesi, will you please conduct a roll call vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Yee.
Aye.
Commissioner Miller.
Aye.
Chair Kunalakis.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
The next order of business is the executive officer's report. Ms. Lucchesi, may we please have that report?
Of course. Good afternoon. I will be updating the commissioners and the public on our two decommissioning projects and also announcing a personnel change. So first, in regards to the Rincon well abandonment and decommissioning project, we continue to make great progress on this project. As I reported at our last meeting, 74 of the 75 wells associated with this operation have been abandoned. The last well, an onshore injection well, is scheduled to be abandoned by the end of this month. Removal and disposal of other production-related equipment and structures are in progress. The commission's contractor, Drill Tech, is preparing the onshore and offshore areas for caretaker status. This work will prepare the site for the hiatus between the end of well and surface abandonment and the final island and onshore decommissioning phase after the feasibility and subsequent CEQA work is completed. Project expenses remain 10% below estimates, and the well and surface abandonment and caretaker status preparation work is on course to be completed before June 30th of this year. The feasibility study, the first part of the phase two of the project, is now. The study will include a geophysical survey, biological assessment, environmental analysis, coastal engineering study, socioeconomic analysis, soil and water assessments, and an engineering assessment. The feasibility study is anticipated to be completed within 6 months, after which the CEQA analysis will begin. The feasibility study and the CEQA analysis will include extensive public and stakeholder outreach. In fact, we started that outreach on April 7th when we hosted a town hall event to update the community and stakeholders about the project status and next steps. The event was well received and attended by members of the Muscle Shoals community in Ventura, government agencies, local non-governmental organizations, and other stakeholders. The Platform Holly Pierce 421 decommissioning project is progressing, albeit slowly. Platform Holly and the plugging and abandonment work remain suspended due to the COVID-19 pandemic restrictions and space limitations on the platform that make physical distancing impractical. Staff continues to maintain and monitor the platform and onshore facilities to ensure public health and safety. Mobile are monitoring the COVID-19 situation and are preparing for plug and abandonment work of the 30 wells on the platform to hopefully resume in late summer, depending on the state's mandates. ExxonMobil will require all personnel, their own personnel and their contractors, to be vaccinated. In March, the commission hosted a virtual town hall to update the community about the project status and the upcoming CEQA process to remove the last remaining oil piers in the shore at Haskell's Beach. The event was well received and attended by numerous stakeholder groups, government agencies, local non-governmental organizations, and members of the public. Staff expects to issue a notice of preparation for the oil pier removal project soon. The commission will be the CEQA lead agency and applicant for the project. We're working very closely with the City of Goleta and the Coastal Commission on this work, and public outreach and input will be a foundational part of the CEQA process. And finally, I want to announce that the commission has hired a new assistant chief counsel, Warren Crunk. Warren Crunk started with the commission as a staff counsel in November 2011 and quickly became instrumental and an extremely valued attorney for our commission, working specifically on lease compliance and Lake Tahoe lease management and public access issues. Warren will be replacing Pam Griggs, who started with the commission as a graduate legal assistant in 2000 and has held different classifications until a number of years ago when she became the assistant chief counsel. I'm really excited about the way that our chief counsel, Seth Blackman, and Pam have worked through this process to bring Warren on as our new assistant chief counsel, because Pam won't actually retire for a couple more months. So we are actively succession planning, where Warren is able to shadow Pam as and learn about her role as she starts to wind down her work and gets to move on to the next phase of her life in retirement, and prepare Warren for the workload and the responsibilities that will he will be responsible for as assistant chief counsel. So we're really excited, happy for Pam in terms of moving on to this with her retirement. And we're really excited for the future of our legal department and also for the future of the commission with Warren as an extremely valued leader in the commission staff. That concludes my executive officer's report, and I'll turn it back to you, Chair Kunalakis.
Thank you very much for your report, Ms. Lucchese, and for all of the work of the staff at the commission for all of the work that you're doing. And I also just want to thank Pam Griggs for her work in bringing on and training her replacement, and to you and Pam and to Seth, and welcome to Warren to the team. And it seems like maybe an appropriate time for me to mention that we've had a staff transition here in the Lieutenant Governor's office as well. Someone who you all know, Matt Dumlau, Dr. Matt Dumlau, who's been our chief advisor on environmental policy, is now our chief of staff. So he was trained for the last few months as well, Pam, just like what you've done with Warren, by Ponerea Avdis, who's moved into the private sector. And we're so grateful for all of her hard work. But I think that nothing shows this office's commitment to the State Lands Commission more than elevating Matt to chief of staff, where for the time being, he is going to continue to have both portfolios. So with that, I will hand it over to the other commissioners. Commissioner Yee, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Chair Kunalakis. Just my hearty congratulations to Pam and for a healthy and rewarding retirement, and really appreciate the staff's commitment for a smooth transition. Always appreciative of that. But also just never enough thanks to continuing these virtual meetings and continuing the business of the commission, which I think really with the broad public participation just speaks to the importance of the work that we continue to do as a commission, and really appreciate the staff making all this possible. Thank you.
Commissioner Miller, questions or comments?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Just also wanted to add my congratulations to Pam. I think, you know, those that choose to serve the public often do so quietly and without credit for all the small incremental ways in which they make a huge difference. And I think Pam's legacy really shows that those incremental things have made just a huge difference to California and to our coastline and our environment. So huge, huge gratitude for all you've done, and wishing you all the very best in your retirement, and congratulations to Matt. I think that's really exciting. So thank you, Madam Chair, and always to the staff, of course.
Thank you. The next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar. Commissioner Yee, Commissioner Miller, are there any items you would like removed from the consent calendar? Next, I call on Ms. Lucchese to indicate which items, if any, have been removed from the consent calendar.
We have not, and I don't plan to remove any items from the consent agenda.
Okay, is there anyone joining us virtually who wishes to speak on any item remaining on the consent calendar? If so, please raise your Zoom hand or dial *9 if joining by phone now. Katie?
Thank you, Chair Konalakis. At this time, we have no hands raised.
Okay, then we will now proceed with the vote. May I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda and a second?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second. We have a motion by Commissioner Yee and a second by Commissioner Miller. Ms. Lucchese, will you please conduct a roll call vote?
Commissioner Yee.
Aye.
Commissioner Miller.
Aye.
Chair Konalakis.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
The next order of business will be the regular calendar. Item 44 is to consider adopting a resolution in support of directing funding from the American Rescue Plan Act to California ports to mitigate negative economic impacts resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic. May we have the presentation, please?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Reed Bajano, and I'm a staff person in the External Affairs Division at the Commission. Staff is requesting that the Commission adopt a resolution in support of directing funding from the American Rescue Plan Act to California ports to mitigate negative economic impacts resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic. The American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, also called the COVID-19 stimulus package, is a $1.9 trillion economic stimulus bill signed into law in March 2021 to accelerate the United States' recovery from the economic and health effects of the pandemic. It's the first financial relief tool that's been available to California ports. As you may recall, at the Commission's February 2021 meeting, the ports of San Francisco, Oakland, Long Beach, Los Angeles, and San Diego briefed the Commission on their contributions to the statewide COVID response and the challenges the ports face given the related economic impacts. The ports also spoke to the Commission about their significant contributions to their local and regional communities in response to the pandemic, including the logistics involved with securing and providing personal protective equipment, food security, emergency response, rent deferrals for commercial tenants, and facilitating and providing services to those experiencing homelessness. Ports played and are continuing to play a critical role in efforts to contain the virus, protect public health, and ensure basic needs are delivered to residents and local businesses. A few examples of these include distributing personal protective equipment at San Francisco's Pier 29, housing homeless individuals in the San Diego Convention Center, birthing the USNS Mercy in Los Angeles, and assisting disembarkation and repatriation of Grand Princess passengers at the Port of Oakland and the Oakland International Airport. Throughout this pandemic, California ports have remained open and fully operational, providing essential services and critical infrastructure to benefit the state and the nation. At the same time, certain California ports have experienced unprecedented hardships and their revenues have plummeted because of the pandemic. The U.S. travel and tourism industry has been devastated, and revenue has dramatically decreased for recreational ports such as San Francisco and San Diego. Business travel, tourism, convention, hospitality industries are some of the main sources of support for these independent public agencies. Some California ports have faced over 50% declines in revenue compared to last year. The Port of San Francisco revenues have fallen to 50% of their pre-pandemic levels for a loss of $60 million this year, $80 million over the next 2 years, and $100 million over the next 5 years. For context, the Port of San Francisco has a budget of only $110 million. As an enterprise within the city and county of San Francisco, the port supports all operations and capital budget with its own revenues. The Port of Oakland has seen a direct loss of $4 million in planned revenue associated with its commercial real estate operations. The port has in turn offered rent credits and deferrals to many lessees to stabilize their finances and secure their leases. Federal relief provided to airports cannot be used for non-aviation purposes. The Port of San Diego forecasts a loss of $98 million in operating revenue since the pandemic hit. This is the largest revenue shortfall in the port's history. For context, the Port of San Diego has a budget of approximately $200 million. The American Rescue Plan will allow the state of California to help California ports recover from the devastating financial impacts of the pandemic, but only if the state directs funding to them. Financial relief will help ensure that ports can maintain basic operations and services while building new long-term revenue streams and placing ports on stable financial footing to carry out their mission. In closing, staff recommends the commission adopt a resolution in support of directing funding from the American Rescue Plan Act to California ports to mitigate negative economic impacts resulting from COVID-19 and allow them to sustain the essential services and critical infrastructure our state and region need to protect jobs and recover economically. This concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Commissioner Yee, do you have any questions or comments?
Not a question, but a comment, Madam Chair. And thank you for your leadership on this issue, too, Madam Chair. Just as I support this resolution, I think it's really critical. We've seen each of the ports really step up in extraordinary ways during this public health crisis while still maintaining operations. And, just having been working a long time in the whole space of local government finance, ports oftentimes are considered the stepchild of any kind of funding that's available. And I really just want to applaud the ports and our House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, for including the transfer authority in the federal bill that will allow the state to make a provision for our ports and hope that we can support that with this resolution. Thank you.
Commissioner Miller, comments or questions?
Just briefly, I'm actually going to abstain from this item, Madam Chair, as we're preparing for the May revision, but our commitment and gratitude to the ports and realize what a pivotal role they've played, and especially over the last year, but for a really long time. So appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Miller. And let me just say that I've already been speaking out on this issue and sent a letter to the governor about it as we move forward with May revision. Healthy ports in California are critically important for a healthy economy in California. We estimate that about one out of every five jobs in the state of California is connected to international trade and tourism. And our ports are home to both trade and tourism. On the trade front, when it comes to shipping activity, ports in California, which are primarily focused on containerized shipping, they're actually doing fine. But the ports that are primarily focused on tourism are getting really hit hard. And as Commissioner Yee mentioned, they are often the stepchild when it comes to funding. So clear action on the part of Congresswoman Speaker Nancy Pelosi to include the transfer authority to be able to support our ports was intentional. I am very, very supportive of this resolution believe that it will send a strong signal to the governor's office of the importance of helping our ports during this difficult time when our ports, particularly the ones engaged in tourism, are doing so much to help those small business women and small businessmen who are trying to stay afloat with their, restaurants and shops that cater to tourism. The management of our ports is doing everything possible to try to help those businesses. For the state to step up at this point and help the ports, help Californians, is just really smart policy. So with that, do we have a motion?
Madam Chair, we do have a number of public commenters.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
First, before we put a motion on the table, I would like to ask Katie if she can introduce our public speakers on wishing to make comments on this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our first public speaker is Joe Stovazant. And then that will be followed by Elaine Forbes.
Chair Kunalakis, Commissioners Joe Stuyvesant here from the Port of San Diego. I had several prepared remarks to make, but based on the comments that you've already made in the staff report, I'm just extraordinarily grateful and thankful for the recognition at your level for what's happening with the ports. And so I'm just going to shorten my remarks to say thank you to the staff, thank you to the executive director, Chair, thank you. And commissioners, thank you. We greatly appreciate you considering this and taking it up and supporting us for all the great reasons that you yourselves mentioned just a few moments ago. And finally, thanks to, we want to thank Speaker Pelosi's office for the foresight to include this in the legislative language to provide the opportunity for us. And with that, I'll leave it there. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Katie, our next speaker.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Elaine Forbes.
Good afternoon, Chair Kunalakis, members of the Commission, and Director Lucchese. My name is Elaine Forbes, and I'm the Executive Director of the Port of San Francisco, and I'm very honored to address the State Lands Commission this afternoon. When the COVID-19 pandemic hit, the Port provided our land and expertise for key state, regional, and local services, and as has been noted, my staff has already briefed the Commission in February on these efforts. And as has been noted, our ports have remained fully open and operational during the pandemic, ensuring that essential services are delivered. However, during the past year, the hospitality services such as cruise, hotels, restaurants, tourist attractions, and conventions slowed or stopped altogether. Recreational ports like ours have borne the brunt of these losses, as tourism and hospitality industries are one of our main sources of revenue. We are experiencing abrupt and dramatic revenue shortfalls, forcing us to cut our budgets in severe ways. Our capital budget is below lifeline support. We've used our savings, and we're facing laying off really essential employees without support. We're experiencing the most challenging moments in the port's history. Our revenues have fallen 50% for a loss of $60 million and a projected $80 million over the next 2 years, this in a budget of only $110 million. Despite all these losses, ports have not been included in previous federal COVID relief. The American Rescue Plan can remedy that and help us mitigate these devastating impacts. With $60 million lost to date and a projected five-year economic recovery for us, it's really imperative that the Port of San Francisco receive these stimulus dollars to maintain basic operations and services while we're building new long-term revenue streams to invest in our facilities, in our tenants, and in the economy. As you know, the port is an economic engine and should be positioned to aid in economic recovery. Our waterfront is home to over 500 tenants, 1,200 customers. Many of these are small businesses and are family operated, such as our small restaurants, fish processors, boutique retails, recreational excursions, among others. We have provided rent relief to these tenants who have reduced services or closed entirely because of the pandemic, so that we can all recover together. I ask the Commission to consider these very challenging circumstances, and I ask the Commission to vote in favor of the resolution to provide American Rescue Plan Act funding to California ports to backfill our revenue losses resulting from the pandemic. And I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Forbes. And as a former San Francisco Port Commissioner, I can attest to the prudency with which you run your operation and your team there. So with that, may we have a motion to adopt staff's recommendation?
We actually have a couple more.
Oh.
Wish to speak. Okay. Port of Oakland Executive Director.
My apologies. Okay. Katie?
Yes, thank you. Our next speaker is Boris Delapine.
I believe that Boris was going to speak in the event that Director Forbes could not.
Oh, sorry about that. Thank you.
No, okay.
Our next speaker is the Executive Director of Port of Oakland, Danny Wan.
Thank you, commissioners, and thank you, staff. I would like to join my industry colleagues, Elaine and Joe, and just saying that, again, judging from the comments that you commissioners made, it clearly shows your leadership and your advocacy and your frequent care and discussions with us that shows your understanding of the roles of the port. So I too will shorten my comments to say that I really appreciate your leadership, Commissioner President Kunalakis, especially for you to recognize your leadership in facilitating the role that the State Lands Commission appropriately play here. And you're very adept in recognizing that the ports that here are managing state assets. They are state trust lands and that the State Commission, State Lands Commission, would absolutely be crucial in facilitating the support that goes to investment in the ports. And also, Commissioner Yi, thank you. You've been always there to talk about the ports and to advocate on our behalf with the state leadership and the legislators, as well as Commissioner Kunalakis, that you've done that. So thank you very much for that. And I just want to make sure that, we support you and we support our colleagues. And the Port of Oakland would appreciate the investment that this bill would that this will make in the ports, as many other states do support their ports. California is stepping up. Thank you.
Thank you. Katie, do we have any other people who wish to comment?
Yes. So far, we have two people left, unless anyone else raises their hand. Our next speaker is Cassandra Costello.
Hi there. Thank you for the honor and opportunity to address this body today, and thank you for your leadership on this issue. My name is Cassandra Costello, and I'm the Senior Vice President of Public Policy and Executive Programs at the San Francisco Travel Association. We are a nonprofit organization that sells and markets San Francisco as a global destination to leisure, business, and travelers. And I'm calling in today to support the resolution to direct funding from the ARP to California ports to mitigate negative economic impacts resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic. Travel, tourism, and hospitality sectors have been hit the hardest due to the economic fallouts from the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm going to take just a moment to demonstrate some of the data from just this past year. Just alone in San Francisco, our visitation was down 61%. Our visitor spending was down 80%, and room nights from our convention business was down 87.5%. And most devastatingly, the number of jobs supported by tourism took a 76% decline. We will not see our economy fully recovered before 2025 due to a projected slower recovery of our international visitors. Our industry in San Francisco relies on the Port of San Francisco and the many small and large businesses, as indicated by other callers, on port property to support our visitors and our industry as a whole. As part of our economic recovery as a city and a state, we need to ensure that ports receive funding to allow them to continue to operate, mitigate negative economic impacts, sustain essential services, and protect jobs. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Cassandra. Katie?
Thank you. Our next speaker is Allison Madden.
Hello. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak on this. I wanted to say that in addition to this act, which of course has been passed and is available now, I believe there will be funding in the next Infrastructure Act, which is a very popular in a bipartisan way. And I think that we should advocate for ports in that. And then in the Green New Deal, I think there will be further money available. And I support getting as much funding to the ports from all three of these acts as is possible. Ever since I've become involved in Redwood City out at the port and in the marinas, I've become kind of a port dork. And I very, very much see their incredible value. And they're really critical. And one thing I wanted to say, and this is definitely related to ports and the funding for ports, and especially Green New Deal, and that is the opportunity for ferries to displace commuter traffic. And especially, there's been no ferry into Redwood City, and the current plan is to try to bring it all the way at the end of Seaport Boulevard, which creates incredible last-mile challenges both on land and water, whereas there is a 10-acre lake that was created by federal taxpayer money, and it's something, it's called Peninsula Lake. It's right adjacent to Docktown, and the county is the one who had leased it or licensed it under the Harbor and Navigation Code in the past to a private marina operator. And I'd like to just call the commissioner's attention. Your website is fantastic, and it's just every year, just more content, more documents keep going up. But Redwood City's picture is old, and there's a 400-slip marina with boats in it. It's empty now, and the old Pete's Harbor is gone now. And so it would be just really nice as kind of a truth and, you know, current representation to have a snapshot of what Redwood City's waterfront and port area really looks like. And I want to say I spend a lot of time, at least twice a month, over at Oakland and Alameda, and both their commercial port, the commercial and industrial port, and their entire waterfront is amazing, with the public access, the separated bike lanes, all of the different businesses, a really engaged and activated port area, marinas everywhere that are valued and cherished, and ferries going into both Alameda and Oakland. And I really have that vision for Redwood City. And I think the money from this action you're taking today, then from the infrastructure, and then from the Green New Deal, could potentially bring the kind of funding and ideas and energy to Redwood City that are needed. And super quick on ending here, we discovered that not only does the county and federal kind of really have better rights to Peninsula Lake, it used to be California State Lands Commission, you know, little rivulets of water, but it is not fee simple title. It would be a great place for a ferry. It's connected three ways. It's walkable. It's transportation friendly. So anyway, thank you very much for hearing me out.
Thank you very much. Katie, are there any other speakers who wish to address the commission?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no other hands raised.
Okay. And I'm proud to say I found the function where I too can see if hands are raised. So that will be helpful in the future. And now, do we have a motion to adopt staff's recommendation?
Madam Chair, I so move.
I will second. Ms. Lucchese, please call the roll.
Commissioner Yee.
Aye.
Commissioner Miller.
I'm abstaining, please.
Mm-hmm. Chair Kunalakis.
Aye. Motion passes.
Great.
Okay. Item 45 is to receive an update on state legislation relevant to the State Lands Commission. May we please have the presentation?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. This is Sherry Pemberton, the Chief of the External Affairs Division. Staff is not recommending that the Commission take a position on any state legislation at this time, though we have compiled a list of all of the legislation staff is tracking, which is cataloged in the staff report for this item. I wanted to report that the commission, as you probably recall, is sponsoring one bill this year, AB 1390, by Assemblymember Borner Horvath. And that bill would remove constraints that make it difficult for the commission to invest in property to generate revenue for CalSTRS by authorizing the commission to delegate authority to its executive officer to make down payments, and by removing a cap on acquisition expenses and clarifying that the commission can use revenue in its school land bank fund for acquisition costs associated with purchasing property. I also wanted to highlight a couple other pieces of legislation, SB 822, but real quick, I wanted to go back. I overlooked that AB 1390 is going to be heard tomorrow in the Assembly Natural Resources Committee, and it's expected to pass and be referred to the Appropriations Committee. So back to SB 822, that's an omnibus bill that has a technical amendment to the Commission's Marine Invasive Species Program. That bill passed the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee and is pending in the Senate Appropriations Committee. I also wanted to highlight SB 824 that would authorize the California Department of Tax and Fee Administration to collect the Marine Invasive Species Program fee from a vessel agent acting on behalf of the owner or operator. And that's also a technical update to our Marine Invasive Species Program statutes. Other than that, staff continues to monitor dozens of bills related to public lands, the environment, offshore wind energy, aquaculture, plastic pollution, climate change, sea level rise, and equity. And again, more information about these items is available in the legislative update. And that concludes my presentation. And thank you. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pemberton. Commissioner Yee, do you have questions or comments? Commissioner Miller? Katie, do we have any public comments on this item?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no hands raised.
All right. May I have a motion to adopt staff's recommendation and a second?
This item is an informational item. We're not recommending an action.
Of course. Okay. Then let's move to the next item. Item 47 is to consider extending the sunset date of the limited delegation of authority to the executive officer for the COVID-19 rent and application expense deferral program previously authorized by the commission. May we have the presentation?
Chair Kunalakis, actually, we skipped.
Did I go out of order?
Yes.
You know, I looked up at you to see. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We are on item 46. If there are no objections.
I have it. Item 46. That's why I went a page ahead. And maybe we can have an update of when we're going to be doing these in person again. Okay. So item 46 is to consider supporting SB 572, Senate Bill 572 and HR 1663, bills intended to reduce pollution along the U.S.-Mexico border and improve and restore the water quality of the Tijuana River and the New River. May we please have the presentation?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. This item recommends that the Commission support S-572, the Border Water Quality Restoration and Protection Act, introduced by Senators Feinstein and Padilla to reduce pollution along the U.S.-Mexico border and improve the water quality of the Tijuana River and New Rivers, and also H.R. 1663 by Representative Juan Vargas, an identical bill that's also intended to restore water quality at the Tijuana River and the New River. And as brief background, the commission has jurisdiction over sovereign land in and near the Tijuana River watershed, and ongoing sewage spills and stormwater runoff carrying trash, sediment, and other pollutants in the Tijuana River Valley watersheds are and have for a while been damaging public lands and resources in Southern California. Everyone agrees that Tijuana River is in the midst of a decades-long environmental crisis. Last year, at the request of Senator Feinstein, the Government Accountability Office issued a report called International Boundary and Water Commission, Opportunities Exist to Address Water Quality Problems. These two bills are based on recommendations from that report, and I'll just summarize the main elements. The bills would designate the US EPA as a lead agency to address water pollution along the border and require the US EPA in consultation with other entities, including state, regional, and local agencies and stakeholders to develop and implement projects, plans, and initiatives to improve and protect water quality in the Tijuana River watershed. Would also require the US EPA to support implementation of a shared set of science-based water quality restoration and protection activities to assess and identify funding options to finance infrastructure projects and authorize the US EPA to accept and distribute federal, state, and local funds to build, operate, and maintain projects. The bills would also require the US EPA to use border water infrastructure program funding and other payments to enter into cooperative agreements and provide technical assistance to agencies and others to carry out studies, plans, and projects to improve water quality in the Tijuana River and New River. I wanted to also mention that these bills are supported by the California Environmental Protection Agency, the California Natural Resources Agency, San Diego and Imperial Counties, the cities of San Diego, Imperial Beach and Coronado, and the Port of San Diego, along with many others. Both bills have been referred to a committee, but they haven't been marked up and moved forward yet. I wanted to also, before I conclude, just mention that the $300 million in the USMCA funding to support border water infrastructure projects along the border. On that subject, the USMCA recently released an NOI and is preparing an environmental impact statement evaluating 10 projects that will be considered for funding. These two bills are meant to be a blueprint to tell the US EPA and the agencies what they'd like to see them do. And to figure out how to spend those monies most efficiently and successfully. So that concludes my presentation. And again, staff is recommending that the commission take a support position on S-572 and HR 1663. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pemberton. Commissioner Yee, do you have questions or comments?
I do have one question, and I'm very supportive of both of these measures. I know that and I don't know the answer to this, and not for today if we don't know, but I know the County of San Diego had declared the Tijuana River Valley pollution issue a public health crisis, and I don't know what that means in terms of additional support from the county or what mm-hmm. that kind of declaration actually means in terms of furthering all of these efforts. So just a question out of curiosity.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Yee. I think Jennifer might want to address that comment.
Well, I will defer to Sherry or Supervising Deputy Attorney General Vogel if he knows the answer. I do not know the answer to that at this time, but we will certainly follow up with you on that and report back to the commission publicly at the next meeting.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Commissioner Miller, questions or comments? So let me just say this is kind of my day. Two of my favorite topics, ports and cleaning up the Tijuana and the New River. So much work has gone into addressing this problem by so many people. And it has been seen as this great, intractable problem for a long time. And with these two bills and the funds that were allocated as part of USMCA, we really can see a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of our ability to do something about it to protect our families living down in San Diego on the border and in the region, in the border region. So I am very supportive of our endorsement of these two bills. And with that, Katie, do we have any members of the public who would like to speak?
Madam Chair, at this time, we have no hands raised.
Okay, may I have a motion?
Yes, I will move both items for support.
I'll second, Madam Chair.
Ms. Lucchesi, would you please read the roll?
Yes. Commissioner Yee?
Aye.
Commissioner Miller?
Aye.
Chair Kunalakis?
Aye.
The motion, thank you.
Okay, and now, item 47. Is to consider extending the sunset date of the limited delegation of authority to the executive officer for the COVID-19 rent and application expense deferral program previously authored by the commission. May we please have the presentation?
Yes, I will be providing staff's recommendation. As you recall, at the April 2020 commission meeting, you approved a limited delegation of authority to the executive officer to enter into negotiated settlements with lessees and applicants adversely impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic and related orders and directives. We refer to this program as the COVID-19 Rent and Application Expense Deferral Program. This program is intended to provide certainty to lessees and applicants in need who are worried about their financial ability to meet rent obligations and pay application expenses, and who desire to remain in compliance with lease terms and applicable laws and regulations. The limited delegation is set to expire at the end of this month. The proposed action is to extend the sunset date of the program to December 31st, 2021. Overall, since the program started, staff has received 65 applications, and under the delegation, the executive officer and our approved 10 applications, declined 5, and 50 applications are incomplete. The majority of those 50 applications are really inapplicable to the leases and applications that we manage. They were more geared to requests from private individuals seeking residential rent relief. The 10 approved rent deferral applications over the life of the program have totaled so far over a little over $25,000 in annual rent. At the time the April 2020 delegation was approved, the pandemic was still in its early stage, and there was very little knowledge of how it would evolve or how long it would last. Staff believes that although things continue to improve with the rollout of vaccines, there is still a need for the program, and ending it on April 30th would be premature. Extending the program through the end of 2021 will allow sufficient time to ensure that all those who may benefit from the program are covered. Therefore, staff recommends the commission extend the sunset date for the limited delegation of authority to the executive officer for the COVID-19 rent and application expense deferral program from April 30th to December 31st, 2021. Thank you, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Yi, do you have any questions or comments? Commissioner Miller? Katie, do we have any questions, any comments from the public?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no hands raised.
Okay. May we have a motion to adopt staff's recommendation?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second, Madam Chair, I apologize.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was saying second. I thought maybe my hear me. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Ms. Lucchese, please read the roll.
Commissioner Yi.
Aye.
Commissioner Miller.
Aye.
Chair Kunalakis.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
Okay. And now, Ms. Lucchese, what is the next order of business?
Our next order of business is our second public comment period.
Okay, if anyone would like to address the commission on any matter that is not on today's agenda, please raise your hand and you will have 3 minutes to do so. Katie, please call on the first person who would like to make a public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no hands raised for public comment.
Okay, that concludes our second public comment period and one of the shortest meetings I think we've had in quite a long time. Do any of the commissioners have any questions or comments? Okay, Ms. Lucchese, what is the next order of business?
Our next order of business would normally be our closed session. However, today we will not be holding a closed session. So we can adjourn at your discretion, Chair Kunalakis.
Okay. And just for my own edification, do we have a timeline for when we will be meeting in person?
At this time, we don't have a specific time frame for meeting in person. We are working with the administration on what open meetings, public meetings like these will look like, especially as we move into June and the state reopens. So hopefully by our next meeting, we'll have a little bit more specifics to share with the commissioners and with the public. We're looking forward to getting together in person too.
Lost the thread of it a couple times today. My apologies to everyone. And thank you all very much. That concludes our meeting, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.